Welcome to the Vintage Podcast, brought to you from the Go Give Show event in 2011. If you missed this Vintage London Cup event, here is an opportunity to catch up. Dr. Stylianos Hatzipanagos from King's College London highlights the importance of the pedagogical approach when using new technologies.
Our next speaker is Dr. Stylianos Hatzipanagos. He's the head of e-learning at King's Learning Institute, King's College London, and he recently edited two books on social media and digital identity, so we thought it would be very valuable to have him on board today.
Good afternoon. I think it's quite timely, my presentation, because the previous speakers have set up quite a lot of the he set up a framework within which I'm going to wander by just giving you some ideas about engaging social media with what we do in higher education as teaching practitioners. So what I will do is, first of all, I will talk about the notion of emergent and disruptive technologies, and then I will look at some challenges and opportunities using social media, and for that I chose two particular areas. One is social networking in general, then virtual worlds and e-assessment. And also we'll talk about research-based learning and what's the relationship with social media. It seems that quite a lot of the, let me use the term, which is quite contestable by quite a lot of people, affordances of social media, they say the attributes of what they're used for or what they can be used for, take advantage of quite a lot of the theories we been using in higher education for a very long time. However, they were slightly problematic or underused in the context of higher education. Now with social media, we return to these theories and we say, well, this theory is much more pertinent now because we use social media. I will explain what I mean by that, but first of all, just to give you briefly an idea of what I mean by emergent or emerging technologies. All of them use the web as a platform. There is a strong architectural participation. We've seen quite a lot of this until now today. There is data consumption and remixing from other sources. I will avoid the jargon, but the term mashup, if you come across it at all, comes to mind. All of them, they're very interactive, and also there is a reach. Quite a lot of people claim, however, it varies from application to application, a rich user-friendly interface. There are strong elements of social networking, and there's a locus of control issue. I will return to the locus of control issue in the next slide, because I will talk now about why these technologies, emerging technologies, are disruptive. And in the previous talk, where I was talking about disruptive technologies, somebody asked me, should you be talking about positively disruptive technologies? Yes, that's what I meant. So, first of all, they can transform rather than enhance. Quite a lot of the stuff we are doing in higher education at the moment has to do with enhancing our practice with learning technologies. However, tools like social media can really disrupt in a positive fashion our academic practice. The locus of control has changed. This was quite eminent in the previous talks, in the sense that the locus of control has moved from the institution, has moved from the teaching practitioner to the user themselves. So quite a lot of these resources, for instance, I will show you an e-portfolio tool we're using, are very much student-centered, meaning that if I, as a student, decide that my tutor needs to see my portfolio, I will give him or her permissions to do that. That's up to me 100%. So there is a case of the institutions and the users having become interdependent. The other aspect that is quite important in social media, the user choice is very important. And the other characteristic is that quite often people use them in unpredictable ways. So they've been created for a particular reason, and we find that in the end of the day, they are used in a very kind, intuitive way by the users. However, I need to locate that in the context of the VLEs. So there is a strong criticism of VLEs in the last 2 years or so. And the problem with virtual learning environments is that they approximate a space that is highly problematic. And the highly problematic space in higher education is the non-interactive lecture theatre. I'm sure you've been more than once in your life in non-interactive big lecture theatres. So quite a lot of people criticise VLEs because of that. There is also focus on content rather than interaction. And also there are lots of difficulties in monitoring student learning and user behaviour. All of these are very insular environments, meaning that people cannot branch out to communicate with each other. And also they are also non-customizable and adaptable. Which brings us to social media. And we talked about quite a lot of these affordances, so I will move fast to the next slide. There is a collective and collaborative information which is gathered, shared, modified, and redistributed in a creative way. These are personal sites, quite a lot of them, and they belong to the me-media kind of category. The user, we talked about the locus of the change of locus of control, because the user quite often, or most of the time, controls the choice of appropriate software, tools and services. And also there is this element which is quite controversial. The collective intelligence of users is harnessed. And this collective intelligence is quite contestable as well. Think of Wikipedia. Quite a lot of people would claim that Wikipedia is not about collective intelligence. Quite often it's about collective stupidity, if I can call it this way. So, what happens with social media and higher education? Again, the previous speakers talked about quite a lot of this, but I highlighted in red some of the characteristics of the social media that educators in higher education are very much excited about. So for instance, blogs, there is a strong reflective aspect. Wikis, there is a strong element of collaborative construction of knowledge. And that's very good, very, very inspirational for us. Social bookmarking, there is an element of sharing resources and also adding some sort of commentary, what we talk, referred to as tagging. Also, there is an element of communication. There's the social networking aspect. And the emphasis there is that this communication can happen in informal or informal spaces. There is another category, and Sally, for instance, I referred to it, and previous speakers referred to it, about immersive environments like Second Life or Open World, and I will refer to that as well. And also, e-portfolios is a good aggregation of different tools that are quite distinct. And this showcase achievement. So these are important characteristics, important attributes of the nature of the social media environment. However, in the context of social media, a theory that kind of inspired me when I was looking at social media, it was the theory of communities of practice. I don't know how many of you have heard of communities of practice before. Can you raise your hands if you have? Quite a few of you have. Well, the problem with communities of practice and social media, or let's go back to communities of practice first, is that quite often it's, let's say, an addition of two layman's terms, community. Or we lack that in higher education, don't we? Because we want to claim that our students are not just a group of people that we force them to go into a room and attend a lecture, but they have more than that, they're a community. Also, the practice element is very good. Practice is, in layman's term again, not about just theoretical knowledge which doesn't have any practical implications, and also people who engage in practice related to their discipline. So this theory was developed by Lavin and Wenge in 1991, and it had to do with people organizing themselves in groups to carry out their activities in professional settings, but also in a formal or informal fashion. Highly popular across different disciplines, including education, and already I discussed why it was so influential, why it was so inspirational. However, the problem until now was that the technologies that were supporting people in becoming a community of practice were, for instance, the VLEs. Very insular, difficult to branch out, difficult to communicate outside the environment, difficult to talk, for instance, with experts in an area, in a particular disciplinary area, who would help students to become themselves professionals and acquire a professional identity. Also, the informal learning aspect of these virtual learning environments was quite limited, because there was a strong formality in how, for instance, content was presented and how communication tools were underused. So, the opportunities, strong opportunities there for community of practice in higher education and social media. So, the theory or the claim is that social media can support communities of practice much better than previous generations of technologies. And how can they can do that? Let me give you a few examples. For instance, link it to professional communities that can provide feedback to the users, to the learners. Link it to other learner or expert groups, quite often transcending or crossing the curriculum, not just vertically, like we do normally in higher education, going from year one to year two to year three, but in an environment where all expertise is gathered together, so people can communicate, first-year students can communicate with third-year students and also can communicate with experts in a particular area. So another advantage is linking to co-curricular and interdisciplinary groups. I don't know if you have come across co-curricular activities before. It's activities that are not directly linked to the curriculum, for instance, placements. However, they contribute to somebody's learning. We said that embedding formal informal lines of communication is very important. Also, creating self-help groups. And in this social media, in higher education, there is this notion of self-help groups. Also, formal and informal assessment places. For instance, I have something which is a work in progress, and I put it through my blog. I put it on my blog, and people comment on it, and they give me some feedback on how to improve it. So there is an element there of community of practice, because the emphasis is on formative rather than summative activities. The other area I would like to talk about is about immersive environments. I don't know how many of you are using Second Life. Can I see some hands? One person in this room. Okay. So, what's characteristic with this immersive environment? First of all, they allow people to acquire an identity which sometimes can be different to their own. And this can be quite important in higher education. However, we thought when engaged in this project, it was called Move Nation, who had to do with students or teachers motivating the students to become, to be engaged in the learning process, so they were using Second Life for that. So we thought that it was a good environment to use because all the necessary technologies were there. There was a space to talk online, a space to complete activities, a space to put resources, but also to find resources, look around to find resources and collect them somewhere. Also a personal space to manage identity. As you know, in Second Life, people can assume identities which are substantially different to what they are like in real life. Also, the important aspect which really intrigued us is that in education, most of the time, people produce something which the tutor can see in its finished format. So it's a black box situation. We see our students in the beginning and then in the end of the education process, and we don't know what happened in between. So in Second Life, and together with other social media, there is this opportunity to see work in progress, but also to see the finished product as well. However, there were some challenges with MOOCs. We came across these challenges, so we tried to overcome them. First of all, there is a sense of dislocation from familiar places. The other challenge was that there is a set of skills and competencies that sometimes are quite difficult to acquire for instance, somebody who hasn't been used to, hasn't seen a virtual world before, an immersive environment like this, may have a problem in finding the way of communicating, of wandering around this virtual world. Operating under an assumed identity, sometimes it can facilitate communication, but sometimes it can make communication more difficult. Imagine, for instance, a shy student who has some difficulty in expressing herself in the classroom. And using Second Life or another virtual world, this becomes easier because under the assumed identity, they can be bolder. Induction in these environments, for instance, taking the students by the hand and show them how the environment works, doesn't really mean that learners can benefit from what these environments are about. And finally, the final challenge was that students, the teachers, had to design these tasks, new tasks, from scratch, rather than reusing some of the tasks that had developed in a face-to-face environment. However, and this is from what we do at King's College, there were a lot of opportunities there. Quite a lot of these opportunities have to do with learning through engaging discussion. So communication interaction is very much strong. It's the strongest element in these environments. It's not about content. So content can be present or linked to. However, communication is very important. We can have multiple simultaneous conversations within the same space. And our students, especially the young ones, are very much used to this kind of thing, are very much used to multi-processing. So they take advantage of that quite a lot. Viewing and discussing materials in video clips, in audio, consuming audio, all this kind of thing. Working jointly in an application. For instance, we are using SPSS, which people can share inside the environment. People can interact with peers using avatars. They can link to other pedagogical opportunities. For instance, we thought that a good idea was if we linked Second Life with Moodle, with a virtual learning environment that we'll be moving towards to in King's College, because for the moment we're using WebCT. Moving from another world to the other is another good activity for people to be involved. The other area I want to talk about is formative assessment, how some of these technologies, social media, can support formative assessment practices. So there is quite a lot of work about that, for instance from McCormick in 2004, who claims that learning technologies can promote understanding of assessment. And also what they can do, they can help teachers to think more carefully, deeper, about conceptualizing assessment in higher education. However, if we think about how computers have supported assessment all these years, I don't know, from your own practice, from your the time you were in the university, if you came across the use of technology to support assessment, quite a lot of it had to do with multiple choice questions or objective tests. So there is lots of criticism on how assessment is supported in an institutional setup. So what we do as part of two projects supported by the Center for Distance Education, the University of London, we looked at some of the technologies that were supporting formative assessment. And we tried to classify them as the ones that was really supporting formative assessment practices and the ones that were not very good at supporting formative assessment. As you can see, in the second category, there were social media involved, like social software, blogs and wikis, e-portfolios. The rationale for this differentiation, just to give you a very brief account, was that we wanted the technology to help people to get better feedback from the students. From the tutors. However, our ideal was not for these students to be passive recipients of feedback. We wanted the students, first of all, to understand and actively discuss the feedback with the tutors and also to act upon the feedback. So the notion of formative assessment was a process which involved students doing all these kind of things. So for instance, I as a tutor would discuss with my students a certain assignment, would identify, would get a consensus of what needs to be done, and then the student would go away and would act upon the feedback, and then we'll review it at a later stage. As you can see, quite a lot of this social media could help this kind of process by, first of all, enhancing contact and communication between tutors and students, or between students themselves. For instance, we could ask the students to be involved in a peer review activity. And because there is this kind of openness in social media, this is not a very difficult thing to do. What I have here is any portfolio. We are using it in my department, King's Learning Institute. And because our students are professional lecturers who have to go through our programs before they or while they go through the probation, we are using e-portfolios. We ask them to use portfolio to collect evidence in order to demonstrate their achievements. So we use a commercial tool called PebblePad, and over the years we moved from a hard copy of a portfolio to PebblePad, which has strong elements of social networking. It has strong elements of social networking because it's a complex tool. In fact, JISC, which I don't know if you come across JISC, who is the body that almost is the adjudicator of LEN technologies in the UK, puts e-portfolios in a separate category. So they say they're not blogs, they're not wikis, but it's a combination of tools that help people to demonstrate their achievement. So what people can do is they can collect evidence which is much more advanced than the paper-based evidence that would collect 10 or 5 years ago. Meaning that this evidence can be collected in terms of in the format of video or audio, shared. There's a strong element of peer review which takes advantage of some of the elements of social media. And also they can have multiple versions of the portfolio. So there is a portfolio for my own use as a student, because I can reflect and keep draft notes and thoughts about my performance. There is another version which is for assessment purposes. So I submit a portfolio to be used for assessment purposes. And the final one, the final version, which is quite important as well, is for professional purposes. So for instance, I'm going to use it for employment purposes as a recruitment tool. Of course, this just doesn't have implications for lecturers or for staff, academic staff. It has implications for students. Quite a lot of institutions have implemented personal development plan, PDPs, frameworks, which use actively tools like e-portfolios, where the social media aspect is very much prominent. And the final thing I want to talk to you about is about social media and the relationship to research-based learning. For those of you that haven't come across a definition of research-based learning is a learning strategy in which the curriculum is organized around the processes of research. And I'm sure you can understand that as researchers, because we try to replicate, we try to simulate what's happening in the research process for learning purposes. So, students learn in a way that mirrors the research process. So we can see quite strong implications there for linking teaching and research. So what happens in practice is people work in small groups on a case or on a scenario or in practical case which has been given to them by the tutors. So they have a real life problem to investigate, and there is this element of authenticity there which is quite important for student learning. Students also have to present the results of the investigations either to their tutors or to the fellow students. So the claim there is that research-based learning enables students to develop important skills for lifelong learning. Professional skills will help them employment-wise. Also, there is an element of reasoning skills, listening, the personal skills. And we can see what kind of correspondence there is between social media and quite a lot of the skills. So social media can be used in this kind of context because they can facilitate investigation, collaboration, the presentation element, and reflective practices. So there is this kind of correspondence with tools like blogs and wikis, where people can share information with presentation software, something like SlideShare could be a good tool to use. The investigation and the sharing of resources using quite a lot of social media that my colleagues mentioned in the previous talks. So there is quite a strong correspondence between social media and what you could do to enhance the links between teaching and research. Rachel mentioned the books, and this is the first book that started us in this kind of trip on exploring social media and higher education. And I would welcome any comments or any questions. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for tuning in to this VTOG Go Digital event podcast.